From Unconsciousness to Consciousness, Number 24. An Osho talk, given spontaneously to an international audience in the USA. What is the function of mind in religion?
The mind is the most complex phenomenon in the whole of existence. It will be a little difficult to understand the function of mind in religion. You will have to go through three doors . The first is the modern Western psychology's attitude about mind. Psychology says mind has three functions: cognition, thinking, feeling. Through cognition, you become aware of the whole objective world around you. Everything that you see, hear, taste, smell, touch, it is all cognition. The world is known through cognition. The five senses are the five ways of knowing the world. But through cognition, there is no way to know yourself. Just because through cognition you can know only the world of things, Western psychology has dropped the idea of being, of your innermost self. It is a very strange situation, because they say you become aware of the world through cognition, but they deny you. Who becomes aware of this objective world? Who sees the sunset and the sunrises? Certainly not the eye. There is somebody behind the eye. But the eye cannot see that someone who is behind the eye. Who hears the sound, the music, the song, the birds in the morning singing? It is not the ear. The ear is only a passage. Somebody is standing behind the passage. You recognize the window, but you don't recognize the person who is standing behind the window and looking at the sky. Western psychology is in a very stupid state. Because of this denial, You recognize knowledge. You recognize the known. But you don't recognize the knower. Now, without the knower, how there can be knowledge and how there can be anything known? But it's strange, no Western psychologist has even raised the question. Cognition cannot help, certainly, to go within. All the five senses are five ways that lead you out, away from the center. But they have no way to turn upon the center itself. For that, something else has to be known. We will discuss about it. Because these three things are recognized, first let us discuss those three things. Cognition is knowing the world, the other. But ignoring you, you become knowledgeable of everything and you become absolutely ignorant of yourself. Do you see the strange situation? Knowledge goes on growing and the knower goes on shrinking. And the knower is the most important thing because it is you. The second thing is thinking. Another function of the mind. Thinking can produce philosophy, theology, science, but thinking cannot give you the truth of your being. Because thinking is always going to be about what the cognition supplies you. It is dependent on cognition. For example, a blind man cannot think about light. There is no way for him to think about light. Because in the first place, he has no eyes. The cognition of light has not happened. The object is not there. Hence, he cannot focus his thinking on something that is not present. It is impossible for a deaf person to think about music. How he can think? There is no way to conceptualize. So philosophy is dependent on cognition. But it only thinks. It never goes farther than thinking. It never experiments. Science is a further step It is a byproduct of philosophy. When thinking starts experimenting, it starts searching for facts, because thinking in itself remains fiction. A thought is just hot air. Unless you prove it by some facticity, science comes after a long tradition of philosophy. When philosophy becomes fed up going round and round and round and cannot catch anything which can be called factual, yes, it comes to know what is logical. But the logical is not necessarily real. Sometimes the logical proves to be unreal. Sometimes the real proves to be illogical. They are not synonymous. But either philosophy or science, both are important as far as religion is concerned. Yes, theology they can create. Theology is nothing but philosophy about God. That's the meaning of the word theology. Theo means God, logi means logic. A logical thinking about God. Nothing can be more absurd. You don't know God. Cognition has not supplied God. That's why science goes on succeeding and theology goes on failing. Because science has some grounds through cognition to enter into objective reality. Theology has no way through cognition. So it simply remains thinking about a fiction. It thinks about God. You don't know God. How can you think about God? Before you start thinking, you must have some sort of experience. So theology is pseudo-religion. Pretending to be religion, but it is not religion. The third function psychology recognizes is feeling. Feeling gives you the whole dimension of all the arts. Poetry, painting, music, dance, literature. But feeling also has no way of proving the facticity. It can give you a beautiful poetry, but it cannot prove that it is a fact. Nobody asks the poets to prove facticity. That will be meaningless. The poetry is not supposed to give you facts. It is supposed to give you beauty, enjoyment of beauty, which is a feeling. If there is nobody to feel, do you think the sunset will still be beautiful? You are wrong. The sunset will be there, but it won't be beautiful. Nothing will be beautiful, nothing will be ugly, nothing will be good, nothing will be bad. All these divisions are through your feeling. The same is true about cognition too. You will be surprised. First, your mind will tend not to believe it, but it is a fact, so nothing can be done about it. The moment you close your eyes, all the colors in the room disappear. For you. If everybody closes his eyes, then all the colors in the room disappear for all. In this room, then there is no color. Because color needs light and eyes meeting. It is at the meeting point that the color happens. If the eyes are closed, the meeting point is missing. Light will be there, but there will be no eye to contact it, and through the contact to create the color. Every ray of light consists of the seven colors of rainbow. Your dresses are red for a strange reason. They are not red. Your dresses are absorbing six colors of the ray of light, except red. The red is thrown back. The other six are absorbed. Because the red is thrown back, it falls on other people's eyes. So they see your clothes as red. It is a very contradictory situation. Your clothes are not red. That's why they appear red. If they appear blue, then they are not blue. If they appear green, then they are not green. Because whatsoever they appear means that color is not being absorbed. The remaining six colors are absorbed, only one color is left out. And that left out color reaches to the people's eyes, and naturally that color they project on your clothes. It is coming from your clothes. But when I close my eyes, your clothes immediately are no more red, because my eyes will not be projecting the color. So even science can only say that it deals with facts, not with truth. This is a fact that your clothes are red, but this is not a truth. Know the difference between the fact and the truth. Fact means as things appear to your senses. And truth means as things are, without any reference to your senses. Theology has nothing for cognition. So it is pure fiction. Philosophy is also fiction, but halfway, because it can turn towards theology, then it becomes pure fiction. It can turn towards science, then it becomes non-fiction, a factuality. But none of these three have any way to know about the person who is knowing through all these three doors. Who is behind these three doors, cognition, thinking, feeling? And because he is not available through these three doors, psychology simply denies it. It is the most dangerous error that Western psychology has committed. The second possible way of thinking about the functions of the mind in reference to religion is Western psychoanalysis. Western psychoanalysis again divides mind into three parts: the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, and the collective unconscious mind. That is Jungian division. And I am using it because it is a step further than Freudian. Freudian division is conscious mind, subconscious mind, unconscious mind. In fact, subconscious mind is only the boundary line between the conscious and the unconscious. It's not much important. Hence, I am not using the Freudian division. Jung's division is far more important. He is saying you have a conscious mind through which you think, see. All those three divisions of psychology happen through conscious mind. Just underneath, nine times bigger than the conscious, is the unconscious mind. Which has immense possibilities. Which comes to life in your dreams, in your fantasies. It has also possibilities like telepathy, clairvoyance, thought transfer. It can read other people's minds. It can project its thoughts into other people's minds, and they will think that these are their thoughts. It has a certain capacity which is known as hypnose. Hypnose is a deliberate kind of sleep. Not natural sleep, but a deliberate kind, a special kind of sleep. In ordinary sleep, you lose all contact from the outside world. In hypnose, the word means sleep, but I am using it just to keep ordinary sleep separate. Ordinary sleep is when you are disconnected from all outside world, the world of objects. Hypnose is when you are disconnected from all outside objects except one person who has created the sleep in you, with whom you remain in contact. You will not hear anything else. If somebody speaks, you will not hear. But if the person who has put you in hypnosis, you will hear. If he orders you, you will follow. If he says you to do something, you will do. And this unconscious mind, in the state of hypnosis, can do things which look like miracles. For example, you can walk on fire. There are many people around the world. Mohammedan Sufis walk on fire, Buddhist monks walk on fire in Ceylon, in India, in China, in Java, in Sumatra. Every year, in many places, in many temples, it happens, and thousands of people are eyewitnesses. You can walk also. All that you need is, in hypnose, being ordered by the person who has hypnotized you, that you can walk and you will not be burnt. The unconscious mind is so powerful that it transforms your very physiology. You walk in fire and you are not burned. The other way is also possible. You are in a hypnotic sleep, in your hand just a cold stone is put, and you are told that this is a stone, red, hot, just pure fire, and your hand will be burnt. Now the stone cannot burn your hand. What has happened? Your unconscious mind is so powerful that the body simply follows it. Religions have used this capacity of the mind tremendously. In India, you can see in almost every village, people putting spears in their mouth from one side and taking the spear from the other side, two holes on their both cheeks, and not a single drop of blood. And for hours they will move in that state with the spear in their mouth. And when the spear is taken out, no blood again. And the wounds heal immediately. No scar is left behind. But it needs the same faculty to function, hypnosis. Now in Russia, they are using hypnosis for education. The child is sleeping with earphones, and in a very, very slow and silent voice that does not disturb his sleep, he is being taught things. And he will remember them in the morning. And he will remember them far better than if he had tried to remember them while he was conscious. Because while you are conscious, your mind is doing 1001 other things too. But when you are in a hypnotic sleep, your mind is not doing anything. It is simply absorbing whatsoever is being poured into it. Now they are using it for indoctrination, for teaching communism. They are using it on prisoners. Prisoners of war. In China it has been used so widely that the people who were caught in the Second World War, when they came back to their countries, were totally different persons. They were communists. And they had gone to fight communism. They had gone with a very anti-communist attitude. And they are back through a prison camp. And they are communists, absolutely for communism. And nobody has told them anything. Everything was done in their sleep. But the sleep has to be managed. It has to be hypnotic, not ordinary sleep. And that can be done because all the religions have been doing it for centuries without your knowing. For example, if you chant a mantra before you go to sleep in the night, and you go on chanting, 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 till you fall asleep, it will not be ordinary sleep. You have created hypnosis yourself. It is auto-hypnosis. Now you will be having a totally different kind of sleep. And certainly in the morning, you will feel the difference. You are more refreshed, more rejuvenated, more clear, clean, younger, fresher. Because in hypnose, nothing moves. All activity ceases. And because it was auto-hypnosis, so nobody was torturing you. But you can manage to hypnotize yourself and indoctrinate you also. For example, you can go on chanting a certain mantra with the idea that tonight I will see Krishna. That Krishna is going to appear in my sleep. In the background, the idea, and you go on chanting. And Krishna will appear in your sleep. As real as anything you have seen. You can touch him, you can talk with him. He will be answering you. There is no possibility for you to doubt. That's how Christians see Christ, Hindus see Krishna, Buddhists see Buddha. And once they have seen in their hypnotic sleep, their belief becomes absolutely indubitable. Now you cannot shake their belief until you disturb their hypnotic conditioning that they have created. The people who have been caught in China were all religious people coming from different countries. When they came back, they were all anti-religious. Their whole religion was taken away in the same way it has been put in the first place. Same method. The unconscious has tremendous powers. It can communicate. It communicates sometimes even without your practicing it. For example, if a son is dying, it is possible the mother may be thousands of miles away. She will start feeling something wrong is happening. Because she has a certain connection with the son. The son is just her part. 9 months he was part and parcel of her physiology, her psychology, everything. His foundation is still connected with her. It happened. One of my friends, he is a very well-known poet. Professor Rameshwar Shukla Anchal. We both were traveling from Jabalpur to Nagpur in the same car. It must have been 12:30 in the night. We were midway between Jabalpur and Nagpur. And he suddenly heard something. I didn't hear. He said, "Did you hear something?" I said, "No." He said, "It's strange, but I have heard three times." I asked him, "What you have heard?" He said, "I have heard Munna, Munna, Munna." I said, "What does that signify to you?" I had no idea that his childhood name was Munna. In India, many children, it is a popular name, Munna. Before they get a right name, they are called Munna, Pappu. Just like that, any meaningless words. It was his childhood name, and he said, "Only my father uses it, nobody else," because he was now himself near about 60. Principal of a college, a well-known poet. Who will call him Munna? Only his father, and his father lived in Allahabad. I said, "Then it is better we stop somewhere and you immediately give a phone call to Allahabad." He said, "Nonsense? Why?" I said, "Don't say nonsense. Because if your father only calls you Munna and you heard it three times and I have not heard, that means something in your unconscious is stirring. And that must be connected with your father." He said, "Do you believe in such things?" I said, "It's not a question of belief. To me, it is very scientific." We stopped at Siuni, a big city between Jabalpur and Nagpur. And that was the only place from where we could get the phone. We phoned. His father had died exactly 12:30. And before he died, he three times called Munna. Munna, Munna, because that was his only son. And exactly 12:30 he had heard. Now, this has nothing to do with the conscious mind. But the unconscious can have a communication. In primitive societies, you will find many people capable of communicating with each other hundreds of miles away, sending messages, receiving messages. As accurately, or perhaps more accurately, than we can manage through conscious mind. By writing a letter, you may commit a mistake. Sending a message on telephone, there may something go wrong. The weather may not be right. You may be joined to a wrong number. Anything is possible. But when unconscious relates to another unconscious, nothing ever goes wrong. This unconscious mind has tremendous powers which are unexplored. And because they are unexplored, religions have exploited. So many religious miracles can be reduced to the unconscious, unexplored possibilities. And one day, every miracle will be possible to be explained by the unconscious mind and its potentialities. All its potentialities have not been developed, but it cannot help you to know yourself. That is beyond it. That is not its power. The third is collective unconscious, which is even more deeper and foundational than the unconscious, because the unconscious was individual. It is your unconscious that you have gathered from the day you were conceived in your mother's womb. I'm not saying from the day you were born. No, it starts from the moment you were conceived, because your, not only your body starts growing, your mind starts growing with it. So the first impact on your mind is of your mother. Those 9 months, whatsoever happens to your mother's psychology, is bound to leave an impact for your whole life. So if a scientific society any day exists in the world, then those 9 months, a mother's psychology, should be taken care of. Because it is not only her mind, she is creating side by side another mind which will be a continuity. If she is angry, something of anger enters into the unconscious of the child. If she is miserable, then something of miserableness enters into the child. But the collective unconscious means millions and millions year old. It carries your forefathers and their forefathers. It carries, if man has come according to Darwin from the monkeys, then somewhere in the unconscious the monkeys' experiences are stored. But monkey is not the beginning. Scientists say the man must have come from the sea. First life must have appeared in the sea as a fish, perhaps. Your unconscious carries all that, all those experiences. You are carrying the whole history of life on this planet. and it affects you. Without your knowing, it manipulates you. It makes you do things, think things, behave in a certain way. But even this unconscious, collective unconscious, has no way towards your being. It can lead you backwards to all kinds of bodies your being had. Perhaps that's what get the idea of reincarnation. Just think of it. Perhaps that is what gave to the Eastern people the idea of reincarnation, that they were before this life. Buddha says he was in one life an elephant. Perhaps he has entered into his collective unconscious. And what he is remembering is not his individual experience, but the collective experience. But when you remember it, it looks like individual. The day we will be able to go deeper and dive deeper into the collective unconscious, that day will be very decisive whether lives continue individually, one is born into one body, then in another body, then in another body, or it is just the collective evolution that leaves its track in each individual and he remembers. But when he remembers, he feels, I have been an elephant. Now Hindus say that the first incarnation of God is fish. It's strange. Just to think of it, why they should have thought there are so many animals in the world. Why God's first incarnation should be fish? Hindus have another incarnation of God, which is half man, half animal. Nobody has bothered to think about these facts in a psychological way. Perhaps it is a remembrance of the very fathom of your collective unconscious that you feel fish. And that certainly means a life incarnates as fish. You can call it God, it doesn't matter. It simply means the same. And the idea, the very idea occurring to Hindus, and the idea is 10,000 years old. It is not a new idea. To anybody to whom this idea occurred, I can say he must have dived deep into the collective unconscious and found life arising as fish. And the second idea is even more important. One incarnation of God is Narasimha, half man, half lion. Certainly, if man has evolved through animals, then there must have been a time when he was half animal and half man. You cannot just jump. That 10 o'clock, you are a monkey, and by 10:15, you are a man. This cannot be. Somewhere between 10 and 10:15, you must be half monkey and half man, transforming, changing. And perhaps that is true as far as the majority of humanity is concerned even today. Half monkey, half man. The division can be two ways. Either you can divide man, the lower half monkey and the upper half man, or you can divide the outer half monkey, the inner half man, or vice versa. But there seems to be so much animal in man that Darwin's hypothesis gains ground. Whether he comes from monkeys or not, that is not the point. But the idea that somewhere from animals man grows. But where the animal will go? Where your childhood goes when you become young? It becomes part of your unconscious. When you become old, your youth becomes part of unconscious. Nothing goes anywhere. It can't go. There is nowhere to go. It simply goes on piling within you. But millions of years before, what happened to life must be somewhere within your life. Of course, at a depth where it is not easy to reach. The depth must be oceanic. The Atlantic or Pacific. At some points are 5 miles deep. I think man's collective unconscious must be far more deeper. 5 miles won't do. Because the whole life, so many changes, so many transformations. But from even plumbing the whole depth of the collective conscious, unconscious, you cannot go towards yourself. Your being still remains the one who is plumbing, the one who is trying to know. You are irreducible to be an object, Let me emphasize it. You are irreducible to be an object. You are always a subject. Always and always, whatsoever you know, you are the knower. You are never the known. The third dimension is from Eastern psychology, which accepts the fourth. Western psychology only accepts three. Western psychoanalysis accepts only three. Eastern psychology accepts four. Waking consciousness, dreaming consciousness, sleeping consciousness, and the fourth. The fourth is not named. It is called Turiya, the fourth, simply the fourth. And they have done well by not naming it, because it is so vast and indefinable that to name it will give it a limitation, will give it a meaning, will make it an object. So they have not named it. They have simply called it the fourth. Western psychology and psychoanalysis both need the fourth. They are in immense need of the fourth. Without the fourth, they are incomplete. Incomplete, illogical, irrational. Because you go on doing things, leaving aside the most important factor of your existence, yourself. Now Freud is concerned about fear, guilt, repression, sex, greed, but not even for a single moment he is concerned about his being. His writings are great. His researches are great. In India, the most famous Freudian psychoanalyst was Dr. Lalji Ram Shukla. He was the head of the psychological studies in Hindu University of Banaras. Just by a coincidence, it happened that one of my friends who used to study with me in Jabalpur, after graduation, I moved to Sagar University. He moved to Banaras University. He fell in love with Dr. Lalji Ram Shukla's daughter. Dr. Shukla was a very famous man. By and by, he agreed for their marriage. They were of the same caste, so there was no problem. And this boy belonged to a very rich family, so there was no problem. And he was the only son. So far, so good. Lalji Ram Shukla was very eager to finish the marriage quickly. So he brought this boy, who is now himself a very famous historian in the University of Jabalpur, head of the Department of History, Dr. Bajnath Sarma. He brought him from the hostel to his home. That why you live there? You are going to be my son-in-law. There is no need for you to live in the hostel. You can live in my house, and I have such a big house, and only I, my daughter, and my wife, three persons are living in that big house. You can have everything separate for yourself. By and by, Bajnath started talking about me because he was immensely impressed by me. 4 years he was with me. And he created so much curiosity in Lalji Ram that he said, you better invite this man. I would like to see him who has impressed you so much. And I have heard not only from you, anybody who comes from that side of the country to my department brings his name. It has come from so many sources that now I cannot wait anymore. You give him a telegram to come immediately and be my guest for a few days, as many days as he can manage. The telegram came to me. I thought it is a good opportunity to have a little wrestling with a great psychologist. I have been wrestling with religious people and all kinds of people, but a great Freudian, this is good opportunity. I gave the telegram that I am coming immediately and I will be your guest as long as you can manage. Even my telegram made him afraid. Is he going to live forever? Rajana said, I cannot say about him anything. He may live forever. But the fault is yours. You had asked him that you can stay here as long as you can manage. He has replied you that I will stay there as long as you can manage. Lalji Ram said that the trouble has started. I was worried that there is going to be trouble. And I reached there in the night near about 12 o'clock. He had come to receive me. He was an old man. We went home. He didn't say a single word on the way. The way was long because my train used to reach Mughalsarai, not directly to Banaras, and from Mughalsarai I had to go by car to Banaras. Mughalsarai is on one side of the Ganges and Banaras is on the other side of the Ganges. So there are trains which go to Banaras and there are trains which go to Mughalsarai. But this particular train, which was the first available, he had come to pick me up at Mughalsarai. But no one spoke a single word. Bajnath was very uncomfortable. He said, "What is the matter? You both are silent." Lalji Ram said, "I am silent because if I say something," and he contradicts it, "then we cannot sleep the whole night." And I don't know why he is silent. I said, "I am simply silent, waiting for the morning." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You start, wait for the morning. Please don't start it right now. I'm tired, long journey, and now in the middle of the night, you wait for the morning." He said, "You have disturbed my sleep. What you are going to do in the morning?" I said, "Morning means morning. I am not going to give you any clue." And Bajnath told me in the morning that the whole night he has been walking in the corridor. I asked him 2-3 times that you should go to sleep and what you are thinking. He said, "I am thinking what is going to happen in the morning." Bajnath said, "What is going to happen? Nothing is going to happen. He is absolutely harmless. You can go to sleep," but he could not. He tried, but he will get up again and walk. He said, "This night I cannot sleep. In the morning," it was a winter morning, so he sat in the sun. And all his postgraduate students, his PhD research scholars, near about 35 people from the university has come. Few professors of his department were also there. I said, "Now you can start. The morning has come." He said, "So let us start from the very beginning." Is there God or not? I told him, "That is not from the very beginning." God cannot be the first. There must have been something before him. There must have been a father to him, a mother to him. Otherwise, how he suddenly jumps into existence? And if he can jump suddenly into existence, then why bother about the whole thing? The whole existence suddenly jumps into existence. If this is going to be the final position, that we have to accept that God is uncreated, then why not accept the simple thing that existence is uncreated? Why bring this one fiction unnecessarily? This is a basic principle in science, that use the least amount of hypothesis is possible. Anything that can be dropped should be dropped. The most minimum hypothesis should be used. That's a basic fundamental of all scientific research. God is a useless hypothesis. It does not help in any way. Because the question remains the same, who created him? It does not change the question, so it is useless. So I said, you ask something relevant, meaningful. I have not come so far to see you and to discuss God with you. And what business a Freudian has with God? I have come to you as a psychologist. That will be better. You will be on a solid ground with things like God, etc. You will be in trouble. You be on your ground, and I want to test you on your solid ground. So to this man I had said for the first time that your whole psychology is missing the most important point. You are talking about the conscious, subconscious, unconscious, but you are not talking about the fourth turi. And the fourth is behind everything. I have shown you three divisions. The eastern division of waking consciousness, dreaming consciousness, sleeping consciousness. The psychoanalyst division of conscious, unconscious, collective unconscious. The psychology's division of cognition, thinking, feeling. These are the only divisions up to now man has done. But only the Eastern psychology has recognized the fourth without giving it a name. And the fourth is the door to religion. What is this fourth? You see things there outside in the world. That is the objective world. The people, the trees, the mountains, the oceans. Then you see thoughts, feelings, emotions, anger, greed. That is your inner world. But who is the seer? These are the two worlds, the outer world and the inner world, but who is the seer? To inquire who is the seer of it all is to raise the basic religious question. God is not the religious question. It is a very childish question. The religious question is, who is the seer? Seer of thoughts, emotions, seer of things, people, mountains, clouds. Who is this seer? Hidden behind everything. The watcher on the hills does nothing but simply watch. No action of any kind. Just a pure mirror which reflects whatsoever comes in front of it. The way to this watcher is very simple. You drop the objects of watching. Because they are covering the watcher. As if the sun is clouded from all sides and you cannot see the sun. It is easy to drop the outer objects. You can just close your eyes and outer objects are no more there. The difficulty arises with the inner objects. They are just shadows of outer objects. Thoughts passing by, dreams passing by, fantasies passing by. Don't fight with them. If you fight with them, you have become an actor. You are no more a watcher. You have forgotten that you have to remain just a watcher. It is a simple knack. Once it happens, there is not any difficulty. But the first time, certainly, it is difficult. It is just like swimming. If you see other people swimming in the river or in the ocean, you are amazed because you cannot swim. And they say it is very simple. There is no problem in it. In my village, there was a very beautiful old good man. Everybody loved him. He was so simple and so innocent, even though he was more than 80. And by the side of my village flows a river. He has made a special spot of his own on the river where he used to take his bath. As far as anybody could remember in the village, they have always seen him day in, day out, year in, year out, whether it is rainy season, summer, winter, makes no difference. Whether he is sick or healthy makes no difference. He will be there exactly 5 o'clock in the morning on his spot. And that was the deepest part of the river. So nobody ordinarily used to go there. And it was far away. People used to go to the river. It was just half a furlong from my house. But that spot was almost 2 miles. And just like our hills surrounding the river, you have to go and pass one mountain, then another, then you will reach to that spot. But it was a beautiful spot. As I became aware, I started going there. And we immediately became friends because you know me, what type of person I am. If he was going to be there at 5, I was going to be there at 3. One day, 2 day, 3 day, he said, "What is the matter? Have you decided to defeat me?" I said, "No, that is not the point, but I am going to be here at 3. Just as you have decided just to be at 5. He said, "Do you know swimming?" I said, "I don't know. But you need not worry. If people can swim, then I can swim. If you can swim, then what is the problem?" One thing is certain, that it is humanly possible. That's enough. At the most, I can be drowned. So what? One day, everybody has to die. It does not matter. He said, "You are dangerous. I will teach you swimming." I said, "No." I told him, "You simply sit here and I will jump. Don't try to save me if I am dying. Even if I am calling you to save me, don't listen." He said, "What kind of child you are? You will be crying, 'Save me,' and I am not to save you." I said, "Yes, I will not be crying. I am simply making it absolutely sure. Perhaps when I am drowning, dying, or suffocating, or water is going in my nose and mouth, I may start crying, 'Save me,' but I want to be clear. I don't want to be saved by anybody in any case. Either I will come out knowing what swimming is, or I will go down knowing that swimming is not for me. And before he could stop me, I jumped. Certainly, I had to go 2-3 times inside the water, came up, and he was standing there waiting that if I call him. But I simply waved my hand that no, I am not going to call. 3-4 times I went in, came out, threw my hands haphazard, because I had no idea how to swim, but what you can do when you are drowning, you try every possible way you can. And within 5 minutes, I knew the neck. And I came back and I told him, you were telling me to teach this, which I can learn within 5 minutes. Just I have to risk and accept the fact at the most it can mean death. Swimming is a knack. It is not an art that anybody has to learn. You have just to be thrown in water. You are bound to start splashing and throwing your hands and your legs, and soon you will find that if you throw your hands and legs in a harmonious way, in synchronicity, then the water keeps you up itself. I had told that old man that I have seen dead bodies passing through the river when a dead man can swim. Do you mean to say to me that I am alive and I cannot swim? Even the dead man knows the art. Because in the rains when there will be floods, it will happen many times. The whole villages will be taken by the river. Many people, dead bodies, dead animals will pass through. So I said, even dead people go on fast. And I am alive. So let me have the chance of knowing it myself. Because my feeling is that it is only a neck. What art there can be? It is not a craftsmanship or some difficult art to be understood. All that I see, people are throwing hands. So I can throw. You have to remember, watching is not some art, some craft. No, it is a knack. All that you have to remember, don't get drowned in the river that is flowing inside. And how you get drowned in it? If you become in any way active, you are drowned. If you remain inactive, passive, not doing anything, alert that I am not supposed to do anything, the anger is passing, let it pass, goodbye. If some thought is going, good, bad, don't bother. Your simple concern is to watch, not to call names, not to condemn, because all those are actions. Action brings you in the mind. Inaction takes you out of the mind. Action is a bridge between you and the mind. Inaction, the bridge is dropped. You are standing there all alone. And the moment you are not active, not in any way participating, a miracle is experienced. It is your participation that gives life to the mind. Its thoughts, feelings, emotions, it is your participation that gives life to it. When you are not participating, they simply disperse, leaving a pure emptiness. You alone, in your utter aloneness. Time stops. As mind stops, time stops. And for the first time in your life, you see the seer. You observe the observer. You become aware of awareness. And this is all that religion is about. But you have to remember the fourth, the three divisions done by three different kinds of people around the world are not enough. You need the fourth. And the fourth is simple. Watchfulness.